big block this week, newsman in the world of cricket.
Just a little one, just tiny.
Sort of like cricket has burst out of the little sport container that it usually sits in. It's become full-blown news.
It's a rare occasion, but when the future of the Australian coach, the future of the Australian captain, and probably the chief administrator, the boss of Cricket Australia, are all in the gun, then that gets people up and listening.
Yeah. Team was caught tampering with the ball, which gives the bowling side a big advantage and is illegal. They were busted red-handed, basically straight away admitted that they had done it, and that it was senior leaders who had hatched the plan.
I don't know about you, but I don't think there has been enough of the vision of the incident played. I just don't think 10,000 times in a week is enough.
Yeah. No, you're
but
right.
I guess it's such telling and such... it's such telling vision that, yeah, it's must see and you get to examine it over and over again.
NT News printed some front page with the guy, Cameron Bancroft, with his hands down his pants and some kind of double entendre headline that I don't remember. Something about balls, I think.
How did I miss that one?
So is it as big a deal as what everyone's saying? Newsman, tell me.
Oh, it's all about how we feel about the Australian cricket side and how we judge others, Web guy. It's Australians have always perceived the enemy as the cheaters, as the people that we can judge because they tamper with the ball. They are match fixers. So it's all about how we feel about it. If we took a step back and really looked at it, perhaps it's serious, but it's not like they are taking drugs or they kneecapped other players to win. But it's cheating, so heads have to roll. There needs to be ramifications that satisfy everyone. So in that, it's an offence. It's pretty bad, but it's more about how Australia perceived our cricket side. We put them up on a pedestal like no other sporting team.
Cricket has had some major style corruption stories in the past, even in the last like 20 years, just like ridiculous stories about teams just throwing games and, you know, intense stuff. And Australia has always, you know, kind of, well, as a citizen, I've always thought, you know, we were a bit above it. And I think the team has actively portrayed itself as being a bit above it. Like, we have this standard of, you know, zero tolerance for cheating. Just, you know, we just don't go there. Which is in stark contrast to some of these other countries that have been caught in, like, terrible scandals. So, anyway, the ball tampering, I was surprised. Like, I was surprised to see it being done.
It's funny. Everyone's comparing it to the Underarm incident as the greatest sporting issue or greatest cricketing issue.
Yeah.
Have you seen much about the, just as we were talking about it, the Mark Waugh and the Shane Warne bookie sort of incident? Has that been brought up much, or has it mainly been the Underarm one?
Mainly the Underarm one, which wasn't even illegal.
No,
at the time when he did it.
It was so just unsportsmanlike.
He said it ruined his life. Trevor Chappell said it basically ruined him. But I don't see the comparison, because what he did was, you know, not in the spirit of the game, but it was not illegal, which this just blatantly is. Anyway.
But I believe you've got a sort of wider picture, a thinking man's look at how this whole situation's unfolded in Australia.
John Birmingham, author, writer, guy, has penned an interesting article headline, "What Are You Really Angry About Australia?" He suggests that Australia's, you know, very intense reaction to this cheating scandal says something more about our collective unconscious as a country. He thinks that all this fury is not so much about the cricket, but about something else. He says, he's suggesting what we're seeing here is an example of some displacement in psychology terms, which means, as far as I can work it out, that means something like when your mind substitutes a new aim or a new object for goals felt in their original form to be dangerous or unacceptable. So he's unqualified to be making these suggestions.
Okay.
I think it's just a bit of fun. But what is it that Australia is really angry about? Because we can't rationally be this angry about a career game. It's just a little sideshow sporting business? Is it that we're actually furious with, I don't know, the Prime Minister or someone, but we can't lash out at we can't lash out at him? Or are we furious at, I don't know, the bank bosses?
Oh.
But we can't really, well, I guess we sort of are having a go at them, but anyway.
Well, I guess looking at that point, this is a very simple, the video footage is so clear. The two players, the captain, Steve Smith, and Cam Bancroft, did a confession that's never been seen before. So open and calm. Mm. That, yeah, it's a very simple thing to go yes, right or wrong. Whereas the other issues you mentioned, whether it's a banking royal commission or an issue to do with the Prime Minister, it's harder to... Yeah, so perhaps this person's right, that we jump on something that's very easy to go, yep, right or wrong.
Yes. You know, average Joe just probably has this sneaking suspicion that, you know what, we're just having the wool pulled over our eyes. Mm. Everyone is just, you know, selling us BS. And then as soon as we can, you know, we find out for a fact that this Aussie cricket team have kind of been doing that, it's like we pounce on them. He says... Don't talk to me about the noble and sacred traditions of the game. There are none. This is merely a perception, or perhaps a shared delusion, might be more accurate, of a game with some history of fair play and honourable conduct. Conduct. I think I mispronounced that weirdly. It's a business, and it's been a huge and ruthless business since well before Kerry Packer upended the table. We didn't get television broadcasts, blah, blah, blah. So he's basically saying this idea we have of, you know, this quaint little game of gentlemen heading out in their woolen sweaters and eating sandwiches for lunch and then playing a game of cricket, old chap. It's not like that. They, you know, I guess they kind of push that picture of the game. But like he says, ruthless business. And it is, because they paid millions of dollars. TV rights are worth millions upon millions, you know.
And you look at the domino effect that's occurred since, sponsors just dropping the cricket side and cricketers like cold, just going, bam, we don't want to be associated with anyone remotely linked to cheating.
Do you know who'd be loving this? All your croquet enthusiasts. They'd be like, all right, they're rubbing their hands together. Okay, now's our time to pounce. We've been waiting for an opening in the market. We're going to take Australia by storm. Everyone's going to want to jump on croquet now that cricket's been disgraced.
No, I think you might be a little bit wrong there. maybe, but
we'll see.
But yeah, it's definitely tapped into the Australian psyche. As you said earlier, I think beautifully, the wool has been pulled over our eyes for too long. Now we're just, Australia is just like the rest of them. We're a bunch of cheats. The whole world's cheating. Lance Armstrong, come back to Adelaide.
Yeah.
You can be part of it. It's all good.
We're one of you now. Newsman, one thing I know you've pondered a lot. This social media thing, it's all well and good. Fine. Fair enough. Have an Instagram account with millions of followers. That's great. Good on you. But how are they making money from it? I know you've asked me that.
I have. I'm not on Instagram still, but everyone swears it's the way to go for sharing stuff, but yeah, I still can't conceptualize how you can make the big bucks.
Maybe this will help open your eyes to the possibilities, because what has happened this week is a man in the UK, has basically hijacked the Instagram platform through an elaborate ruse and used it to get himself all kinds of free stuff, gifts, goodies, invitations to some pretty exclusive parties. So
free stuff. My antenna just went up. Tell us more. Tell us more.
This is how it happens. Because on Instagram, it's all about, you know, the size of your audience and who you are and who you know. And this guy wanted in on all that. He wasn't famous himself, but he wanted a piece of this pie. So he came up with this elaborate strategy to post pictures of himself hanging out with Russell Brand, international superstar.
Mm.
The only thing is he didn't know Russell Brand. So this is what he did, and this will maybe explain to you how the game works. He basically put out a call to track down someone who looked like Russell Brand, which he got. And then he arranged to to meet at a hotel with this Russell Brand lookalike.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to some lengths to come up with a pretty official-looking email address as if he worked for Russell Brand. Got in touch with the hotel, and they were only too happy to set them up with, you know, this swanky suite, which he arrived at with the Brand lookalike, wearing glasses and not talking to anyone. So they quickly raced to the room before anyone knew what was up. When they went, once they got in the room, he started taking pictures of himself with the Brand lookalike, and then used the this face swap kind of app to take the lookalike's face off and replace it with a real Russell Brand photo that he'd got off the internet.
And this is pretty easy to do, the whole face swap. I reckon I've seen it many times on internet, but generally it looks weird because the face doesn't match the shape of the face.
Yeah.
But this would work.
This was the art of it. Easy to do, hard to make it look convincing. And so what he had to do was he knew what photos of Russell Brand he was going to use, so he had to make sure the lookalike positioned his head at the same angle as the photos he already had. So it was a bit, he said it was a bit involved. It's too hard for average Joe to do this. But anyway, doable. He did it. Started posting all these photos of himself with quote-unquote Russell Brand. And as soon as he did it, he was getting bombarded with, messages and comments and, you know, a whole lot of hype about his meeting with Brand. And then he started putting out posts like, you know, if you want to send us stuff, feel free. This is where we are. And they were getting sent all kinds of gear, all this stuff. And then he was getting invited to parties. And the bottom line is he cleaned up. And he said he felt bad about tricking all these people, but at the same time, the willingness of brands and businesses to just give expensive free stuff to celebrities is really ludicrous.
Can I stop you right there? What are they hoping to achieve by giving him stuff that hopefully it'll be posted on future Instagram pics?
No, you say you have to then post the picture, oh, thanks to blah, blah for the blah, blah.
Right. So, they're getting mega publicity
through
just connecting Russell Brand with X product.
Yeah, that's right. They know Russell Brand has a big following, and they want to be involved in any of his posts. It's like you're getting a shout out.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's better than a TV ad with some of these size of some of these audiences. So basically, that's how you do it. That's how they do it. If you want to go to the lengths, you know, you too can live a life of the rich and famous.
So what were there any negative ramifications for this guy, or he just pulled off the biggest heist of all time?
No, at the end of it, he was threatened with legal action
by
the real Russell Brand. So not recommended.
So step one, get a lookalike.
Yes.
Step two, master face swap.
Yes.
Step three, put the plea out for connections, plugs, send us stuff.
Yep.
Step What am I up to? Four.
Mm-hmm.
Get a good lawyer.
Yes. Yep, that's it. Four easy steps.
Well, if I got pictures with you on Instagram, would we get anything, do you think?
Well, neither of us are really in that Russell Brand category. so probably not.
Who do we know that could get us some?
You could. You could. You have a sort of an on-air profile. If you snapped a photo of yourself in the news booth about to read a story and say, hey, before I give people the news, I like to drink a Gatorade.
Yes.
Thanks, Gatorade guys, for giving me all these free Gatorades.
Or I'm holding a pen, I won't say the brand, but if I said, took a photo going, when I put my weather update on the news bulletin, I use this pen.
Yeah.
They just might send me a box of pens.
Start putting yourself out there and you'll find this stuff will be rolling in.
Can't wait.
Food for thought. I can see the cogs turning over in your head.
Web guy, during the week, the RAA, the motoring body in South Australia, got penalised for some of its car insurance advertisements. Are you aware of these ads, Tim?
I can't place them, no.
Okay, they're actually some of my favourites. There's a guy that's all bummed out because his car got totaled, and the RAA guy goes, well, because you got this certain insurance, you'll get a brand new car as a replacement. He gets all excited, and a sign dangling above the car drops and busts the windscreen.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I do remember seeing that.
Yeah. So it really does give the impression that if you insure with RAA, you'll get a new car.
Yeah.
But they've got in trouble because it's not clear enough, this lifetime vehicle replacement claim. Basically, it needs more details. I think you have to insure from day one, and I, from the fine print I remember reading, is it has to be a car of a certain age. So
okay,
you can't insure your 1985 Commodore or whatever.
Mm.
It's got to be a pretty new car, and you have to insure from day one. It's probably a few details that they left out.
In an ad, you can't go into a contract. Don't they just say conditions apply and that's enough?
Yeah, but I guess it would get you excited. It's a good hook to say, look, brand new car.
Okay.
You get a brand new car if you stuff up this other one. And earlier this month, there was a case involving Heinz, the food giant, where they advertised their little kids' Shreds food products, saying they were healthy because they contain basically all fruit and vegetables, but it didn't really reveal that it's very high in sugar and really not healthy at all for the kids.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's the sort of the sector I work in, but I'm pretty, if I think something sounds good, I generally read, quickly look at the fine print because I think, how is that possible? How is that possible? But I am concerned there'd be a lot of people that just blindly follow advertisements and would get trapped up in, number one, thinking a kid's product is healthy because Heinz says it is, and that, you know, insure with us and you get a free car if you crash the other one.
The food one I hate because little kids, like, and you're just wanting to give them, like, good quality food, and to be doing it, thinking you are, and turns out it's, in fact, you know, the opposite of good for them, is a really ugly one and something that I think is really bad. And it sort of leads to this point where these businesses are not there to give us healthy food or actually give us good insurance coverage. They're there to make money. And so they play the angles. They know the little loopholes and the gray areas that they can play around in between what they can say and what they have to deliver and how they can, you know, make money in that little space. And it's, you've got to be, I don't know, it helps to just take everything with a big dose of skepticism.
If you take a step back, it's actually very, very clever the way they use terminology. My all-time favorite with food is 100% fat-free, when something could be loaded with sugar, but it doesn't actually have fat itself in it. But as we know, you have too much sugar and you don't burn it, it turns into fat.
Is that clever or is it evil?
Well, if you take the morals out of it, it's clever, it's great writing, it's great marketing. But, yeah, it's just...
Makes me just question my whole life. Like, I think it's an RAA ad where if your house gets, you know, flooded or something, you go get to live in a hotel, is what I'm led to believe.
See, that's the same... We'll have to look into that one as well.
Don't tell me that's not true. But see, I mean, you look at that ad and really, is anyone thinking they're going to get put up in a 5-star hotel, no strings attached for as long as it lasts?
Well, it's an image. It's a lasting image. We both, as soon as you said it, I could picture the man and the woman wrapped up in the towel, calling for bubbles instead of orange juice, and the RAA staff member just looking at him like, oh, you freeloaders. And we're going, yes. That's exactly what I want from my insurance company.
I actually tried to intentionally flood my house after seeing that, just so I could go stay at the Playford.
And how was the rest in at Salisbury?
Oh, well, I forgot that I didn't have insurance, so it was a major backfire.
So buy beware, some pretty dodgy ad campaigns out there.
Stay on your toes, people. You go in the lotto, Marcus?
Very rarely. My partner does dabble occasionally in lotto, but... I remember reading something about how extraordinary the odds were that you're almost as likely to win it if you don't enter as if you do, if that makes crazy logic.
It does make sense. Like, you're more likely to be hit by lightning twice
really?
Than win the lottery once. I also have this weird theory that everyone thinks you win the lotto and then you get millions of dollars and you beauty. I actually have this theory that is not going to improve your life at all.
Oh.
I honestly think the value of money is way over-exaggerated.
I think if you won enough to pay off your mortgage or perhaps buy a new house and that was about it, I think that would be a nice sort of head start in life where you can tick off that list.
How many stories, though, about people whose lives just fall apart after they've won the lottery?
They blow it. I don't know how they do it. Because I always have this. Do you ever picture the scenario where you win money?
It's run through my mind once or twice.
Yeah, like you go, all right, I win $5 million, I'll give $1 million to my parents, $1 million to my brother, $1 million to my sister, I'll buy a house, and I'll put the rest in the bank and live off the interest.
Right,
So there's my little snapshot plan.
Yeah.
But these people must overinvest or buy Ferraris and change them every month or something. I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. The you say you win it. Do you turn up to work the next day?
I would, but my focus would waver very quickly. And the first time anyone pulled me into line for anything, I'd just go, nah, enough. I'm out.
It's you. Then you think, oh, you're not going to turn up to work. But then you think about it. What are you going to do? Like, really? I mean, as appealing as it seems, the reality I don't think would be all that great. And then if you become a millionaire, you have to start hanging out with other millionaires.
And they don't like your new money.
You're going to be an outcast because you didn't earn your millions, buddy. You just got some dumb luck. So, you know, you're going to be an outcast.
I disagree with the work thing, though. I think you would find, if you're motivated enough, you'd find things to do on your own terms. So for me, I'd still love to be doing some sort of media coverage. I'd probably set up my own podcast network or TV network or something and make me the boss.
Cool. Can I join?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so despite all that, people still want to win the lotto. And what would I tell you if there's a guy who has won the lotto and he's telling other people how they can win it too? You'd think, oh, well, what big deal? He won the lotto. Yes, he did. But he didn't win it once.
Twice.
He didn't win it twice. He didn't win it thrice. He didn't win it 4, 5, or 6. He won it 7 times.
Sheesh. So an actual balls out of the barrel lotto he's won 7 times.
Some of it was that.
Oh, not some. All of it.
But, you know, seven. He won. This guy is in the US, Richard Lustig. Between 1993 and 2010, so he had like 17 years of, you know, just going hardcore on the lotto. He won, in Australian terms, $1.3 million. Doesn't sound like a whole heap.
No.
When you really break it down, does it?
Still, it's better than a kick in the head.
Yeah, and he was getting holidays and, you know, some of that sort of stuff. So, I don't know, maybe this is more of a scam than anything. Tell me what you think. He is, you know, he's got a book and a website. You know, you too can win the lotto 7 times. He reckons he's already made a few people millionaires who've followed his advice. Disclaimer, I'm not guaranteeing you will win a grand prize. What I'm saying is that I will teach you how to increase your chances. It's a game of luck. All right, so he's got some tips here. I'll go through them for your benefit.
Thank you. Because you obviously don't seem like it would benefit you, so if you win, we'll make the agreement on audio tape right now that you'll give me the money because you don't think it'll change your life. It'll change mine.
Okay, deal. But I get to be vice president of your podcast network.
Okay.
This is where he loses me off the top. He says, you want to treat this like a job. Okay, I'm out. A job?
Yeah, that's taking it a bit far.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much saying you got to put a full commitment into prize winning. A
lot of commitment. So, you know, no one's doing that. Like, you just buy the odd lotto ticket, I imagine. Like, no one is dedicating themselves to this. But if you want to win it 7 times, that's what it takes. Are you up to it? Anyway, he says, anything worth having, you have to put work into it. Okay, mate, fair enough. Firstly, set a strict budget. Never go over it. Mm-hmm. So that sounds to me like he's just covering his butt. So he's not breeding a, you know, following of problem gamblers that are all going to leave themselves homeless and come.
It's a good tip, though.
Come like looking for him.
Great tip.
Solid advice
for all gamblers. Yeah.
Secondly, okay, so this is about winning off scratchies. Only buy scratchies at locations where there are still unclaimed prizes. I don't know if you can find that out. Maybe you can. Maybe this is what he's talking about. You got to do some legwork. Buy a minimum of 10 tickets. So some maths reason why you should never get less than 10 to boost your chances of winning. Here's the catch. All 10 have to be purchased from the same roll.
Yes.
Again, I don't know if you can... Can you tell them that that's what you want, or do you just get what...
Oh, I think it's on a roll. So Yeah, they'd all be in a line and they just go vrip and 10 would all come off in a row.
You know so much about scratchies.
And I know why he wants to do that because he's obviously done the odds and
yes,
probably 1 in 10 is a winner.
Yeah.
Whether it's a small prize or big.
All right. So that's probably the most basic scratchy advice ever by the sounds. Let's get into the big leagues. The big time lottery draws.
Yeah, this is what you want.
Yeah, this is what we
can
do.
This is a sweet spot.
Yeah. Never limit your numbers to meaningful dates. You know, people like to pick a birthday or anniversary, use those numbers. Don't do it because you're limiting your number selections to just those between 1 and 31. I don't know what the numbers go up to, but you're missing out on a whole range of possibilities.
I think it goes into the 40s in Australia, but...
So if you got married on the 48th of March, you might be okay. Yeah. Oh, no, hang on.
That's it, yeah.
All right. Are these good tips? I don't know. I'm in the dark here because I don't...
Once again, if you look at it statistically, there's no reason why numbers 1 through to 7 won't come up any more or less likely than spreading your numbers far and wide.
But if the numbers do go up to 50, say, and you're never picking above 31...
True.
There is a little, there's a spectrum there that you are not hitting.
Yeah, spread it out
over
the thing if you need to.
This might be a good tip. Avoid the big games like Powerball because they're the ones that, you know, make headlines and, you know, I want to win $50 million. Well, don't go for that. Go for smaller jackpot games. He says the odds of Powerball winning Powerball are 1 in 300 million. Astronomical. Like we said before, you're more likely to probably become president of the US, even if you're not a US citizen. Odds of winning... Now, he's in Florida, so he's called it the Florida Lotto. Must be like just their local state thingo. Odds of that are 1 in 24 million. Still sounds quite long to me.
Yeah, but it's, what, 15 times more likely?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a good tip, I think. Don't get...
greedy.
Don't get dazzled by the bright lights of the mega draws.
Yeah.
Now, also, he says reinvest winnings into more lottery tickets. That sounds dangerous. Use hand-picked sequential numbers. Not sure what that is. Sorry, I'm not a mathematician. And this one I have heard. You should use the same numbers constantly.
You should?
Yeah. So,
because you don't want to be heartbroken when they... come up. Well, but
I guess you pick your combination
and
the chances of that combination coming up are lower than, you know, a totally new combination every time.
What was the amount he had won over what period?
Over 17 years, he won 1.3 million.
So if you divide that by 17 years, that's probably a good wage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really it is. He's just making a wage like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly more.
Just a wage slave.
Over 17 years, we'd probably make... No, not that much.
No, I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah. And he's disclaimed this himself, but I don't know. I don't think we want to be seen to be telling people to take up trying to win the lottery as a job. I don't personally think that's... good advice.
No, because unlike a job, you're guaranteed your wage every week or month. This for all of that good advice, you could still come up empty-handed.
Absolutely.
Tim, I actually thought I'd broken the secret to winning prizes myself because back in the day, and I'll sound old, competitions weren't online. They were you rip a coupon off a shelf at the supermarket. And I targeted ones where you had to put in a bit of effort.
Right.
So you had to purchase 3 jars of pasta. Or you had to, in 25 words or less. But I became disillusioned when I found out that 25 words or less, they now have a computer scanning for the keywords that they want. So you imagine that someone's reading it and are on the same humour
yes.
line of me and going, ah, that one's a bit yes. out of the box. Yes. We'll give it to them. But no, yeah. it's all very calculated.
It's
so
an algorithm.
It's an algorithm. And I got soured by all of that.
I knew you had this... had this disappointment in your life because you've often asked me about Facebook competitions and how do you pick the winner?
That was the other thing. Like back in the coupon rip days, they'd say on October 26th, this prize, the winners of these prizes will be published in The Australian on page 54.
Yeah.
And that gave me confidence that it was legit.
Yeah.
The other ones, I'm not sure.